Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, January 14th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. That book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Deceptively simple. Print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. Absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and were called in with powerful testimonials about how the use of those tools has improved their life, their quality of life and relationships. Or they've called in and asked powerful questions, and we've had very useful discussions to help people understand how a tool that is as deceptively simple can be as powerful as it is. We encourage people to do that soon and often. Download the chapter of the book and read it. Download the worksheet process itself and use it. Go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. Before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce those tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do that soon and often because it frequently leads to comments and questions, and that's what we're here for. We're here to support people in learning how to use these tools, understanding the power of simple tools like this to improve their life quality and to be of service in that way. And you can assist us in living into that intention by calling us if you have comments or questions or testimonials at 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, and we can have a conversation. In the year 2021, we went through the Course in Miracles workbook lessons. We went through that workbook lessons have 365 lessons. And we did most of them. We didn't go back and cover all of the weekends, but we tried to keep what was relevant to keep the continuity going. And we did that in conjunction with reading Pam Grout's Course in Miracles experiment book as added commentary. Hold on just a minute, please. My apologies. There was an unexpected interruption. Somebody walked in the door marked private and acted like it was public. So we did the Course in Miracles experiment commentary to go along with the Course in Miracles lesson. And then people said, okay, so what are we going to do for our 2022? And a couple people recommended that we read through the Way of Mastery. So we began doing that. We made it through the first lesson on Wednesday, and we went back and started reading again yesterday. Again, a quick review. I think it's humanly impossible to go too slowly through this book. And the reason for that is it isn't just a book. It's a suggested coursework for life. It's a suggested goal of waking up to birthing the mind of Christ within your own consciousness. And so the practice as it unfolds this year is just going to be fluid. And we might stay with the first lesson for a good long while, or we might move on Monday. It all depends on the kinds of questions and comments we get and how well it's sinking in to people that there are actual shifts in perspective that we can allow ourselves to question and to have, which can change our experience of life, that this, the process of looking into and reading with and working with the words and concepts in the Way of Mastery can indeed be life-altering, every bit as much, if not more so, than any other spiritual tool. It all depends on the individual mind and history and willingness and the resonance you have with a particular teaching. It's not about the teaching, it's about your growth. It's not about the teacher, it's about your growth. It's about your awakening to more and more of the awareness of who you are. Truly, not your thoughts about yourself and who you think you are, but the truth of who you are. So, to continue from where we left off yesterday, indeed, beloved friends, this is at the top of page 4 in the second paragraph at the top of page 4. Indeed, beloved friends, I come forth to meet you wherever you are because I have chosen to use the infinite power of consciousness given to me from the Creator, from the Father, Mother, God, from the flow of life as it is, as equally as it has been given unto you. But I've chosen to use it to discover how deep delight can be when the mind is focused only on seeing from and seeing only the mind of Christ. This reminds me of the Francis of Assisi quote, St. Francis of Assisi, who was quoted as saying, what you are looking for is what is looking. What you're looking for when you say, I want to find God, I want to wake up, I want to have enlightenment, I want to be holier, what you're looking for in that moment is the awareness, the creative force, the mind of Christ looking through you, living through you, breathing through you, seeing through you. And so the book says here, I come forth to meet you where you think you are because I've chosen to use that infinite power of consciousness, the same as you've been given by creation. I've chosen to use that power of consciousness to discover how deep delight can be, how deeply delightful it can be when the mind is focused only on seeing from the mind of Christ and seeing only the mind of Christ wherever it looks. Waking up to realizing that when you're looking for something, what you're looking for is the activity of awareness that is looking through you. It goes on to say, I have therefore called to myself all multitude of experiences. Even when I walked upon your earth as a man, those experiences I called to myself, I called them to challenge myself, to test myself, to condition myself to rise above and to transcend all possible experiences that could distract me from remembering who I am. So another way to talk about what the way of mastery is it's a set of practices and instructions to help you wake up and remember who you are. That's another way to say it's a set of tools to help you birth the mind of Christ, because that is that one mind, that connection to the one mind, that connection to the Christ mind, that is your essence. The book goes on to say, by the way, of my crucifixion was simply the climax of my own direct choice to be challenged by the events of space and time so that I could cultivate within myself the ability to see from and to see only the perfect purity of the mind of Christ. The point I'm trying to make with you is that in each and every moment, what you are experiencing in the realm of your emotions and your mind and the effects to a latter degree within the body, all of those things you are experiencing are there because you, from your infinite freedom, have simply selected that experience to focus your attention on so that you can see what the effects are. Now, I know when I first started reading this, there were parts of my mind that would scream at that and say, that's ridiculous. What about those poor people who were victims of Hurricane Katrina? And I remember one time I had very young children, and there was a story about a family in my area of the state of Northern Illinois that had like 8 children all killed at once in a traffic accident on the highway. And, you know, I had children of a similar age, and I had all these intense emotions, and I read some story about how the parents said they're perfectly at peace, that, you know, their Creator called their children home and the love of Christ will be, and I just thought, oh, that's just complete baloney. And in that moment, I was literally creating more upset, more agony, and more grief in my own life, and my children were healthy. I was creating more agony and upset than these people reported that they were feeling because of where I was choosing to focus my conscious awareness. So I'm going to read that last paragraph again. It says, the point I'm trying to make with you is that in each and every moment, what you are experiencing, where? In the realm of your emotions and your mind and the effects of that to a latter degree, a lesser degree within the body, all of those things you're experiencing are there because you, from your infinite freedom, have simply selected that experience to focus your attention on so that you can see what the effects are. The insanity does not come from having chosen to see something other than the mind of Christ. This might be important. Where does the insanity come from? Well, it doesn't come from having chosen to see something other than the mind of Christ. You're free to play in this world. You're free to play with the dream of separation. You're free to imagine that you're less than somebody or that somebody else is greater than you. So the insanity doesn't come from that. The insanity that you experience as your pain, your suffering, your seeking, and your dramas, this insanity comes only from your mistaken choice to become identified with what if has arisen in your field of awareness. So it's okay to play. It's okay to have these thoughts. It's okay for me to say, oh boy, if my kids died in a car accident, I wouldn't take that perspective. It's okay. But if I identify with that, I solidify it. I take it so seriously that I think this is helps define who I am. That's where the insanity comes from. When you identify with that set of thoughts or experiences or the dream of separation, you lose the sight of innocence. For all events are perfectly neutral, and you are free to see them any way you want. Now, when a child is born, many of you who are mothers know this. You can experience a depth of joy that is just unspeakable. Likewise, you can also experience fear and contraction at the thought of having to be responsible for a child. When a loved one dies and you experience grief and suffering, rest assured that is because you have chosen to contract your attention. And when you do that, then all you can see is the loss of an animated body, and you thereby convince yourself that you become separated from that loved one. I speak from experience when I say that separation is an illusion. And again, this is the wisdom that even great physicists like Albert Einstein have talked about. A human being is part of what we call reality. But we create the illusion of separation. So if you think you're separate or separated from anyone or anything, you're living in an optical, mental, emotional delusion. Einstein goes on to say that delusion of separation helps us create a special affection for certain people and things nearest to us. My children that I love more than anything in the world. You know, my neighbor that's the best neighbor on the planet. My God that's better than everybody else's image of God. My car that's just such a joy to drive. My spouse, who is just the best spouse ever. Einstein goes on to say, when we create that special affection for a certain few things that are close to us or a few people that are close to us, we create a prison for ourselves. And the only way out of that prison is not to quit having affection for people and things. It's to extend that same powerful, intense affection to everyone and all of creation. You're not separate from the people that you have known in the past who've moved out of state or divorced you or died. You can create the perception, the experience within your field of energy, mind, body, emotion, energy system. But it says right here, and many other spiritual teachings say the same thing. I speak from experience that separation is an illusion. When death occurs in your plane, in that very moment, you still have the power to choose to recognize that something has changed, and then to shift your attention to a different faculty of the body that the body could never possibly contain. One in which you perceive and hear and communicate with that spark of divine light, that soul that seems to have given up the idea of trying to keep a physical form animated. This is imperative. In fact, it is the very first step in the way of the heart. The first step in the way of heart, the first step in awakening, is to allow into your mind this first axiom of truth. Nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. So when your favorite pet dies, if you choose to say, I'm going to miss this pet so much, I'm aching, I'm so sad because this pet suffered, this pet was only X number of years old and the average life expectancy is twice that, and I was hoping that this pet would be with me for much longer. If I focus my awareness on all those kinds of thoughts, I'm going to generate a lot more of the negative emotional states that we call anger, resentment, grief, sadness, hurt, etc. If I allow that that comes up rather naturally because of our conditioning, and I breathe into it and let it flow through me, and then choose to shift my focus over to what a blessing it was for this pet to have me in its life, and what a blessing it was for me to have this pet in my life, and I focus lovingly, gently, on all the wonderful memories and all the exchange of loving energy that went between us, and the realization, which is also accessible, that in this moment, if the person or the pet no longer has a body, it can't be suffering physically. So I can literally generate joy and relief and affection and affectionate memories just as easily as I can generate the sadness, the hurt, the pain, the resentment, and or the fear of moving on without that pet or without that loved one. So here's the first step in awakening, is to allow into your mind this first axiom of truth. Quote, nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. Breathe, soften, and try to let that into your mind. I remember I had some friends that lived down in they lived in Peoria. And a tornado came through very near their town, their home, and swept through the town and wiped out dozens of houses. And so I was paying attention to the news when they, you know, days and days later, when they finally let residents back in. There were evacuations, and they had to, you know, strip power lines and make sure that gas lines weren't broken, and before they would let people back in to survey the damage and, you know, back into their homes if their homes hadn't been destroyed. And, of course, news cameras were there. And so here's a woman reporter and a news crew, and they run up to this family that's standing in front of a driveway, at the end of a driveway, and at the other end of the driveway was this hole in the ground with a pile of rubble where their house used to be. And it's that tornado came through and did this to just, you know, a whole row of houses, several rows of houses on this in this subdivision. So they ran up, and here's a man and a woman and one or two children and a dog standing there. And they ran up and said, oh, tell us about the tragedy. And mother and father spoke up and said, we are just so grateful. Everyone is safe. All of this is just stuff. It can be replaced, you know, the good Lord, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's not what the drama and trauma of the news wanted. So they were there for maybe 15 seconds, and she runs down the sidewalk to this other family. And they're just the next-door neighbors to the people they just talked about. And they likewise are standing at the end of a driveway, at the other end of which is a hole in the ground with the rubble that used to be their house. And the news reporter said, tell us about what happened. And there's wailing and gnashing of teeth and all the photographs, and nothing can be replaced. And the news reporter said, so did somebody die? Did you lose? No, we're all fine that way, but you can't replace the memories. And they stayed there for, you know, the 90 seconds or whatever, because this is the drama and trauma they're looking for. But I'm sitting watching that because I have friends that lived there, and I wanted to see the news. And I was struck by the power of the real-life demonstration here's proof for anybody who wants to see it, that the outside events in our lives do not create our emotions. These two families living right next to each other had the same tornado completely demolish all of their physical possessions and their house. One family chose gratitude, optimism, relief, joy that everyone is safe, the pets are safe. The other family, even though all the family members and the pets are safe, the other family chose doom and gloom, depression, looking to the future is so negative. The first axiom of Way of Mastery is inaction right there to be observed. Nothing that you experience, same outside events for both of these families, but what they experienced came from the choice of the focus of their conscious awareness. And they each experienced only the effects of their choice of what to focus on and how to interpret the actual energy shifting in the world around them and between them and others. The book goes on to say, during the first part of this course, we will be building lesson by lesson on what I am choosing to call the way of the heart. It is the way unknown to the world. It is a way unknown to many that would call themselves spiritual teachers. For it is not a way of resisting, resting, or becoming dependent upon magical means. This is not a way of becoming dependent on magical means and mind tricks. This way is rather the pathway which cultivates within you the decision to turn your attention upon your own mind, upon your own behavior, upon what is true and real for you moment to moment. And once you do that, you turn your attention upon your own mind, you study it, you consider it, you feel it, and you breathe the light of spirit through it and constantly retrain the mind so that it assumes complete responsibility for what you're experiencing in each new present moment, moving us closer and closer toward 100% responsibility for every emotion we experience. The book goes on to say, why is this necessary? Because without it, there can be no peace. Without it, you cannot transcend the false identifications that you have already chosen. You need to come to the point where you say to yourself, quote, I have done this to myself. I did it. I must correct it. No one is to blame. The world is innocent. Close quotes. 100% responsibility for what I experience. In the lessons that follow, we will be communicating with you more and more deeply the finer points of the way of the heart. For it is that way that was taught to me. It is that way that brings about the reversal of every thought you have ever had about anyone or anything. It is that way alone which allows you to pass back through the eye of the needle and to come to rest in the perfect peace from which you have sprung forth. The heart of the mind of creation. The way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. For indeed, that aspect of the mind was never designed to be your master. It was designed to be the humble and, if you will pardon the expression, very stupid servant of the awakened heart. So the way of the heart, pathway of the awakened heart, not your mind, not your ability to gronk, comprehend, crush things down into what your language or your 9-bit mind can communicate to others. The way of the heart is about being in the world without being of the world, without automatically responding from the conditioning of the world, which is what is held in your intellect. So I'll reread that paragraph again because it's a fairly pivotal statement. The way of the heart is the way of the awakened heart. It is not the way of the intellect, what Michael Rice would call the 9-bit mind, what Guy Finley would call a mechanical level of consciousness that just keeps churning. Rather, the way of the heart is the way of the awakened heart, not the way of the intellect. For indeed, the intellect, that aspect of the mind, was never designed to be your master. It was designed to be the humble and, if you will pardon the expression, the very stupid servant. Servant of what? Servant of the awakened heart. This echoes Albert Einstein's statement, something similar to, we're living in a culture that was given a precious gift and a faithful servant. The precious gift is the intuitive mind, the creative mind, that ability to tap into what in this book they're calling the Christ mind, the heart of God, of creation, of Holy Spirit. That's the precious gift. And the faithful servant is the conscious logical mind. And Einstein said, the problem here is we were given a precious gift and we were given a faithful servant, but we live in a culture that has literally forgotten the gift. How many classes did you have in school where they taught you how to tap into your creativity and your intuition and your gut feeling and your insight and build creativity in you? When I ask that of people, the vast majority of people say none. And yet, how many times were you taught, you got to figure it out. You got to read this book and crunch it down and spit it back in just the way the teacher wants you. That's the intellect. So the problem is not only did we forget the precious gift and we don't train ourselves or our children to tap into their creativity and their insight and their intuition, but furthermore, and perhaps even a bigger problem, we've elevated what was intended to be a faithful servant or a stupid servant, we've elevated it to the level of master. And Michael Rice says, so we've got the pseudo-solutions of the hateful, bitter, resentful, sad, scared, non-being mind, the pseudo-solutions of it. The number one pseudo-solution, the opposite of a spiritual solution, is I'm going to figure this out. And every time I try to get my conscious, logical mind to figure things out when I'm angry, I fail miserably. I create more of what it was that was creating the upset to begin with. It's what David Bohm called sustained incoherence. It's what Krishnamurti called mistaking the word for the thing. And we stay stuck. The way of the heart is not about the intellect. The intellect was designed to be the humble, and please forgive the phrase, very stupid servant of the awakened heart. It's your heart awakening that this book, this process is about. It's you stepping into an experience of yourself as the miracle of the creative energy expressing in form. It's you being able to notice, identify, question, and release any identification you have with any thought that creates a negative emotion or a negative judgment against yourself or somebody else. The book goes on to say that the heart is that which feels all things, embraces all things, trusts all things, and allows all things. And as we continue to read, you will probably hear that's also the definition of love. Love feels all things, embraces all things, trusts all things, and allows all things, and thereby transcends all things. This paragraph reads, the heart is that which feels all things, embraces all things, all energies, trusts all things and energies, allows all things and energies. The heart is that in which the soul rests eternally. The heart is that which is beyond space and time and is that spark of light in the mind of the Creator, in the mind of God, which is called in this work Christ, Christ mind. Only in that will you find the peace that you seek. You will discover that the pathway of awakening is not a pathway of avoidance. It is, however, a pathway of truthfulness. It is not a pathway of accomplishment and pride, but a pathway of releasing from the consciousness every hope, every wish to be special. Every hope, every wish to see yourself as having made progress. Every urge to be so proud of yourself that you can pound a fist upon your chest and flash your tail feathers and hope that someday you'll be good enough for mom or dad or your spiritual teacher or God to let you into the kingdom of heaven. This pathway is a way in which you will come to cultivate, regardless of your inner experience or degree of awakening, you will cultivate the willingness and the art of returning to the simplicity of empty-headedness and not knowingness with every breath. And there will be an exercise that comes later in the book that says, I want to be awake and aware to understand I don't know what anything is or is for. There's an exercise that says, hey, pick up a paperweight on your desk. Pick up your pen. Pick up your cell phone and just honestly admit, I don't know where this came from. I don't know where the materials that are making up this hunk of energy came from. I don't know who had the first idea to create a pen, et cetera, et cetera. Just being in the direct observation about, I don't really know all of the things that my mind is so busy trying to hold on to and prove to me that it knows and that it's right. And this ties right into the wisdom in Byron Katie's work, where she says, we only suffer when we believe our negative thoughts. So her whole process is about opening to the questioning. Can I really know that this negative thought is true? Can I actually know beyond any doubt that this is true? And of course, most people, when they honestly answer that, they say, no, I can't really know absolutely with 100% certainty that this is true. But even if I say, yes, I can know with absolute certainty that this is true, then I can ask the other two questions. Okay, how do I feel when I believe this is true? And I can just get very deeply honest about what I'm doing with my conscious awareness, what I'm focusing on, and how I'm creating an experience in my life that's negative when I believe this negative thought is true. And then the fourth question is simply, okay, what would my life be like if I didn't hold on to this, if I did what the Way of Mastery is asking me to do in the very first lesson, to release my identification with the negativity, with the negative thoughts and conclusions, with the focus on the negative thoughts and conclusions? How would my life change if I let go of that? So, this is a way, the way of the heart, is a way in which you will come to cultivate, regardless of your inner experience or your degree of awakening, you will cultivate the willingness and the art of returning to the simplicity of empty-headedness and not knowingness. And you'll do that with each and every breath. This is a way of life in which all things and all events become an aspect of your meditation and your prayer until there is established once again within you the truth that is true always. And here's one of the many ways that they summarize the truth that is true always. Sometimes they say, I and my Creator are one. Sometimes they say, not my will but thine be done, for I myself do nothing, but the Creator, the Father, Mother, God within me does all things through me. The book goes on to say, imagine then a state of being in which you walk through this world seemingly appearing like everyone else, and yet you're spacious within. You're empty within. In actuality, in the capital T truth, you desire nothing. Though you allow the energy of desire of this creative force flowing through you to move through you, and you recognize it, the voice of your Creator, guiding your personality, your emotions, and even your body to the places, events, people, and experiences through which the tapestry of the atonement, the at-one-ment, is being woven, through which all of the children of creation are called home again. Imagine that you trust the complete flow of that, whether you're asked to give a speech in front of 10,000 people or you're asked to tell a friend the truth of your feelings or whether or not you're asked to sweep the streets and live penniless. For in truth, the mind that trusts the source of its creation allows all things, trusts all things, embraces all things, and transcends all things. Rest assured, whenever you feel frustration and anxiety, it is because you have decided not to trust the truth, capital T truth, not to trust in what actually is. And truth is simply this. Capital T truth is simply this. Only creation's plan for salvation can work for you. Your way must always fail. For your way begins with the illusory and insane assumption that you're separate and separated as a being from the mind of creation, and you must therefore direct your own course. Kind of insane if you think about it. I forgot to eat yesterday. I left my coffee in the house when I made it halfway to work this morning. 3 days ago, I looked down when I was in the middle of a meeting and realized my zipper was unzipped. That same mind thinks, oh, the way life is unfolding right now, this is all wrong. The life that's been unfolding for, as our scientists today talk about it, 13.84 billion years, bringing us all to this moment and the next moment. My silly 9-bit conscious mind wants to look at that and say, this is all wrong. I know better. This shouldn't be happening. Area code 610, is this Susan?
Hi, Dr. Tim. Sorry, but I had to jump off the phone for a minute and handle something. I'm back and loving these readings. And I have a kind of strange testimonial about the interface between listening to this way of mastery this time and doing a mind shifter that I had. Michael had said, what is this monster you keep talking about, this angry monster? Have a look at that. And he gave me a mind shifter, and I couldn't do much with it because all I could think of is, this monster is my creativity. It's my energy. It's my vitality. It's my full spectrum of colors. I don't want to get rid of the monster. And then the idea comes, well, what about the anger? And I couldn't do much with it. So I just let it sit, as in sitting in the middle of the patter. And somehow these readings of the Way of Mastery have set the stage for what I had last night, was one of those rare, epic dreams. And I won't go through the dream except to say I was a very wealthy woman. I was myself. I was living with Timothy Bingham in the present in a beautiful house with an atrium with parquet floors. And a friend of mine who is a minister in this life was washing the floors. And I knew her. And a bunch of things happened which were deeply frustrating in that dream. And it was simple. It was, I had forgotten a date to have lunch with a friend, somebody I hardly knew whose name I couldn't remember. And I kept trying to access my iPhone, but the iPhone was a different iPhone than the one I have in this plane. So suddenly it occurred to me, this is like a nightmare. And then I'm looking around, looking at a house that is as real as the house I live in now. And I'm remarking to myself, this is a dream. And notice how real it is and how absolutely unweird it is, hallucinatory seeming it is. This is a reality, and it is a dream. And Tim Bingham was sitting there, and I said, Tim, would you please come up off your chair and shake me so I can wake up from this dream? And he got up and disappeared. And I'm standing there watching my friend mop floors. She's my housekeeper. And then I woke up. And I thought so many things. The first words that came to my mind, I can't remember them, and they were so important. Oh, they'll come to me. The thought came to me, the reason I was willing to leave that dream and that scene is because I was not attached. And the reason we are all staying in this life is because we're attached. And that's what it said. The voice said, you're waking up from one dream right into another. This also is a dream. And you don't have much more time on this earth either before you wake from this one. I woke up feeling, you usually think epic dreams, you're going to feel inspired. I just felt this expanding, but not ecstasy or anything. I wrote the dream down very carefully, and it has just been exploding in my mind, and everything you read in the Way of Mastery is feeding into it as truth after truth after truth. And the monster is my critical parent. It's my, if I look at a person on the street and something's off, maybe the person doesn't look the way I want them to look, I'll feel critical and I'll diminish them in my mind. All of a sudden, it feels as if everyone and everything is here for me, put on this earth as my friend. And this isn't personal to me. This is true for everybody. Everyone we meet is a gift to us of their companions and their messengers and their friends and allies. And they can come in any form. And if there's an irritant there, we get to thank them to show us something else that we need to clear. But it can clear really fast if we realize they're here as a gift. Where's the rankling? I mean, it's gone. You just want to greet the whole world as, oh my God, I'm so glad to see you. And so this is what I've been thinking about. I don't know what this is, but it's a report. I'm giving a report. And so I'll stop talking.
Well, I'm delighted for you. It sounds wonderful. It sounds like
it is.
You're allowing totally. That you're allowing something in this process, and you're choosing to, come along for the ride of the readings and whatnot, and you're allowing some of it to transform your experience. And
well,
that's
and you know,
what
Dr.
this
Kim,
is about.
I went online to read about parallel universes because this wasn't in the past. You know, people talk about in past lives. This wasn't a past life. This is a right now life. And I thought the giveaway was I had an iPhone, but it was designed totally differently, and I didn't know how to do it, which meant part of me was in this universe being puzzled about that phone, which if I was totally in that universe, I would understand how to use the phone. So I went on, and I've been listening to this podcast about parallel universes, and it's filled with mathematics and diagrams and formulas, and I don't know what to make of it. But they do say there may be thousands of parallel universes going on at once, and I'm not going to think about that because that's getting into my brain, and it's not going to help. It's just that there's so much there, and our minds are too stupid to get it all. But there's another way into it, and that is the way of the heart, which you
yeah,
keep
the
emphasizing.
The awakened heart. Yeah.
Yeah.
The awakened heart.
Doesn't matter.
And that the conscious logical mind and the concept of multiple universes, et cetera, was only always and forever intended to be just a servant of the awakened heart.
Mm, wow. So right during your radio show, my daughter calls, and she had called me early this morning and said, my grandson Jacob has had a relapse. He had been sober for 6 months. He got drunk last night, which isn't even the drug of his choice, and he ate a lot of ice cream and felt sick and ate some more ice cream and got drunker and came home and caused drama and chaos for most of the night last night. And she was very frightened and very sad. And after we talked about that, I told her about my dream and hearing that I'm not going to be here for much longer. And she said, oh, Mom, I need you to stick around. And I said, I don't mean that literally. I don't think time exists in the way we think of it. I just mean it's all short for everybody. And she said, don't go. Don't go. I really need you around. And I'm thinking, I'm here. I'm around. But she called me during the radio show and said, Jacob came around. He apologized to her. He said, I really took a dive. And we're going to stop giving him an allowance. He doesn't need one because he lives with her and he has food and a roof. And he's making a little money from a very small job. So she said, I'm stopping the allowance until we know you're steady again because you're obviously using that money for the wrong sort of thing. And again, she said, I hope that dream wasn't true, that you're not going to be here. And this is such music for my ears. We were estranged for 25 years. And I think of Sulinda talking about her daughter. And I just think the gift of her company and the fact that her abusive husband had to get out of the picture and we could reestablish a relationship. He kept her away from her old friends, her family, her relatives. And she went along with it for the sake of the marriage and she thought for the children. She's been through so much, and here we are, healing, 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 like on a roller coaster of healing. And these words that you're reading are just food. And I don't say anything directly, but I'm sure it's feeding right down through to my kids and my grandkids.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah,
very glad to hear it.
Anyway, thanks, Dr. Tim. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening. I've been busting. I haven't known who to tell. Poor Tim Bingham comes down having had a dream of his own, and I made him listen to mine. And it's funny to think he was my husband in that one, and that's very reassuring. Oh, I tell you, everything's so strange. So, Dr. Tim, I don't know what to say next, but thanks for listening.
That's all right. That's all right. You're very welcome and deserving. I'm glad that you're allowing things to just unfold. That's what this way of the heart is about. You know, it says very, very clearly that this is not an intellectual path. It's not about resisting. It's not about judging. And so if you're using regulatory speech, you would say, oh, yeah, then it must be about all those things. Well, no, because it goes on to tell you exactly what it is about. This way of the heart is about allowing, embracing, feeling, embracing, trusting, and allowing all things. And that is pretty much the opposite of what our intellect does. Our intellect divides and conquers and judges and evaluates and compares. And the awakened heart just breathes into and allows the flow of energy. There's Michael Singer's work, and he did this online course. He's written two books that are wonderful. One of them is called The Untethered Soul, and the other one is called The Surrender Experiment. And then he did an online course, and we've done it in the support group of at least twice now, that the online course is titled Living from a Place of Surrender. And in that online course, he talks about how you've got this energy center that goes from your root chakra to your crown chakra. It's like a conduit for energy. And what's intended in our creation is that we learn to just breathe into, through, and allow all these energies move through us. And we just watch them, and we appreciate them the way we would appreciate a symphony or a marching band performance at halftime at a sporting event, that we just experience it without the judging, without the grabbing hold of, without the pushing away. And that's a possibility that we can learn to get back there. But in our Western mind, the Western culture, we've been conditioned to grab on to certain experiences and energies and push away others. And his point is, every time we do that, we create more turbulence in the energy flow. And it's that turbulence in the energy flow which gives rise to all of our negative thoughts and emotions. And the more we grab onto things and push away other things, the more we create these boulders, so to speak, these blockages in our energy flow. And life is just going to keep flowing. Life is like this river of energy that wants to flow up through our root chakra to our crown chakra and vice versa. And every time we grab onto certain things and push away others, it's like creating a boulder or a blockage and putting it in the way of that flow. Well, life just keeps flowing. We keep creating these blockages. As life hits those blockages, it creates turbulence, and it's that turbulence that creates our negative judgment, our negative emotions, our negative experience of life. This way of the heart speaks directly to that, because the awakened heart feels all things, trusts all things, embraces all things, allows all things to flow.
That's so good.
Very, very, very similar teaching. So thank you. I realize we're at the end of our time, and I will mute you so we can make the transition. Have a wonderful weekend. Thank you for your input.
Thanks, Dr. Tim.
You're welcome and deserving. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you. Hope you have a really good weekend.
Thanks. You too. Have a great show.
Thanks. Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. We'll give Michael just a moment to get dialed in. And today, unless we have callers, of course, we're going to take the callers first. We are going to cover the app worksheets because we've had a question come in on the app. And so thank you all who helped me test that. I had received an email from someone in Finland that had used the app, and they said they could type in the worksheet, but when they went to type a note, that it was invisible. And so I had several people to send me a test question out of the app just to see if they had any issues and if it was coming through okay. And it seems like it's fine, so it must be a setting on his phone that it typing white letters on white or transparent or something. But anyway, it appears that that's an issue maybe on his end and not a problem within the app. If someone else happens to run across something like that and you believe that there is a correction that needs to be made, please drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and we will make sure that it is corrected. I invite you to go to our website, too, which is whyagain.org, W-H-Y-A-G-A-I-N.org, and click on the Start Here button. Just scroll around, look at all different things, and there again, if you find something that isn't working quite right, then drop me a line at Jeannie at whyagain.org. And I'll welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and we could also remind everybody that all of those things that you can access on the website, you can also access right from the app. You've really got it set up in the latest version of the app for people to very conveniently find things on the website. So the way that the app is growing, I think, is just phenomenal. Nice work, sweetie. And welcome, everybody. Honored and delighted that you're here. We get to have this conversation one more time. And build brain cells, extend the understanding of the power of this process of first century Aramaic forgiveness. So delighted that you're here. And we had spoken about, as a result of some questions that came in from the app about the worksheet, about going over the worksheets. And before I step into that, let's just check, Jeannie, is there anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
No, it is all quiet. Nobody has a hand up. And so the question that we were going to address, what started this, is we got a question from the app, and they wanted to know if in the worksheet, if number one was them or the person that they were working on. And I said, yes.
So it is a yes.
We're going to go over that. It is a yes.
Both,
it's both.
True.
1A, B, yep. E, D, E. They're different aspects of the
right.
same thing.
Yes. And just once, I'm just getting hold of the worksheets. I was thinking in terms of yesterday we were planning on doing this, and the line just kept ringing in with hands up for questions, and I'd certainly much rather do questions live and have that live interaction that always opens a deeper space for understanding the principles. So if hands pop up, let's make a shift
hand
into.
Pop up.
Well, then let's say hello to the hand.
610, I believe it's Susan.
It is, and I was going to listen
Welcome.
To your thing with great thank you, but if you want questions, I have some.
I always want questions.
One of the projects I want to do, before I ask, how's Dad doing, Jeannie?
We had a conference call this morning with the head person in administration and the person over physical therapy and the nurse and the doctor. And we did find that one of the big things that they were doing incorrectly was, Michael, adjust your microphone just a little, is the medicine he takes for Parkinson's, it has to stay in his system or he's cognitively not there. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, the bottle says to give it to him 2-4 times a day. But what they were doing incorrectly, and we finally, I mean, I've said this for 2 weeks, and nobody got it, and they finally got it, that the 4 times a day needed to be at the right times of day. And they weren't giving him his first dose till 10 o'clock in the morning, which meant it wasn't in his system until 10:30 or 11, and he always had physical therapy before that. So he was out of it. He wasn't present during therapy. And so they've now adjusted it so that his first dose will be 6 o'clock in the morning. And so that way it'll stay in his system throughout the day. And so hopefully we'll see a big shift there.
Oh, good. So,
yeah.
And it was interesting.
An advocate.
Yeah, it was interesting that the reason why he wasn't getting this medicine until 10 o'clock was because on that particular hallway where his room is, they don't give out medicines till 10 o'clock. The medical doctor who's supposedly in charge, was very clear. 10 o'clock is too late in the day to start that medicine. But, you know, that was their routine. So, well, you know, why would we vary our routine? So, interesting that...
And the last
ahead,
dose was 10 o'clock at night. And it's like, you don't want to give it to him at night because then it kicks in and he's awake all night and he doesn't sleep. So, you know, just that one little change, I think, is going to help.
Oh,
so
boy.
We will see.
Boy, we need advocacy.
And you had a big, big reason to celebrate yesterday, sweetie. Maybe you want to share that.
Yeah. I spent about 5 hours with Dad yesterday after the radio show and fedding dinner. And that was another thing we finally got through to them. They kept bringing in bread and pasta and meat. And I said, he won't eat any of those things. So he wasn't getting any nutrition. So now they're pureeing his food, and he's getting things, you know, that he will eat, and they're leaving the bread out. And so, you know, that was a big shift, too, to get them to finally listen to us on that. But, yeah, I was talking to him, and, you know, the day is mostly, you know, like I'd say, you know, Dad, what do you think? And he'd look at me and go, I don't know. And then in a few minutes he'd look at me and say, what do you think? You know, mm-hmm. And so it's really like our conversation is not very instructive or whatever, rational. It's just talk. And I would show him pictures and try to get him to remember stuff and everything. And usually when I get ready to leave, I'll say, I love you, Dad, and kiss him. Or like even Michael on the phone, he didn't go yesterday, but he talked to him through the phone. And he said, you know, we hold you in our hearts and our love, and, you know, we appreciate you and all of that. And Dad's response to either of us is always just, okay. But last night, he told me he loved me.
Oh, Jeannie.
Oh. So that was big.
Yeah.
Stop
and
making
create a
your...
space where all of the old grief needs to be processed.
Yeah, and everybody's crying with you, Jeannie, because we all have it. Man, that cuts deep. Hearing your dad tell you he loved you when you think he might have gone for good and lost.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So I think we've got some changes in the works that we might see a difference. And I said, you know, maybe I'm grasping at straws and not realistic that he'll ever come home. But he deserves every chance to do that.
Yeah. Right.
And so he hasn't been making any progress at this point, and we're holding the space that this will support him be able to make the next level of progress.
Yeah.
So thank you for asking about that, and we appreciate your
concern
and caring and your extending love in his direction and our direction.
Well, it's
been
on everybody's minds. Everybody who's listening, they know what's happening with you guys, and you tend to point the beams on all of us, and we get to ask our questions, and meanwhile, you're sitting there with a lot of life going on. So,
definitely.
Yeah, thanks for the report.
Thank you.
Welcome. Well, I don't know where to begin except that, and I explained the dream a little bit to Dr. Tim. I had an epic dream last night, which was an answer to your admonition two Tuesdays ago, or almost, and I'm so glad we didn't meet last Tuesday because I hadn't been able to settle down with my monster. But I had a dream because I was doing this mind shifter, and it got nowhere. All I got was, my monster is the essence of my activity. It's my vitality. It's the full spectrum of myself. It's my everything that I treasure about myself and think is great is part of the monster. And if I did surgery, I might just become, you know, a robot or something. And I knew that wasn't right. So I didn't get very far with the mind shifter, but I did do what your worksheet says to do, is ask to be shown. And I just went fallow
just went peaceful and thought, I let it sit around the edges of my mind and I went about my business. Last night I had an epic dream. Basically what I realized in the middle of the dream was I was living in a dream, and it was as vivid and clear as my life here that I think I'm in now. But it occurred to me that I was dreaming. So I said to myself, I'm dreaming and I want to get out of here. But I didn't know how. So I said to Tim Bingham, which is lovely that he was in there too, I said, would you get up and shake me so that I can get out of this dream? And he said, sure. And he put down the newspaper and got up and walked over to me and disappeared. And there's a lot more to it, but I finally woke up. And it wasn't because Tim shook me. It was just I woke up and the first thought that came to me was, you think that was the only dream? You're living in a dream right now. And this dream, too, is not going to last for terribly long. And it was a happy thought. It wasn't like I'm going to die tonight or anything. It was like we have no sense of how long or what time means. And it struck me that I was living as a very wealthy woman in a beautiful big mansion with an iPhone that I couldn't operate because the me in that dream hadn't learned how to use it. The me in this dream was experiencing, in this life, was experiencing frustration with that iPhone, which was an iPhone, but it was designed very differently. And I thought, I'm living in a parallel, I have another life that's running right alongside this one. It isn't a past life, it's a right now dream.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
The answer to the monster came, it's all for us. If I meet somebody on the street who's rude for me, it's God's gift to me, and I would be glad. And I know you have told us this, Michael. This is not new, but I got it. It's like everything.
But you got
it. The trees, the lampposts.
Nice.
They're here for us. And so what do we think? We don't get critical. It's not an impulse. At least at the moment, I haven't had any, knock on wood, impulses to be critical of anyone. It's like, I'm so glad to see you. Thank you for being rude to me, you know.
Mm.
The monster seems...
That takes great learning.
Oh, my God. I hope it lasts, but I'm sort of telling you so that you can hold me accountable. I hope it lasts.
Well, we'll certainly hold the space for it and remind you if something else comes up.
Great. It's bound to, I'm sure. But it just blew the mind. Anyway, and I have a whole nother question, which is...
Before we go to the next question, let's talk about this just for a minute, because recognizing that being has a set of faculties that allow us to experience life directly as the Creator created it, directly as the energy system works, and then.
Mm-hmm.
The mind comes into, or what appears to be the mind, comes into the picture, and it makes up something different.
Yeah.
Generates a whole different construct. Remember, one of the mm-hmm. things the Course says about that construct is, this is your creation. You don't want to believe it has any faults. You want to see it as perfect.
Yeah.
You don't even want to question it. And it sounds like you've gotten to the point where you've been instructed as to how to question that other reality, that firing of brain cells that tells you a story that is the parallel life, that has nothing to do with what's actually true about you or about the world of the creation.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds to me like you really got the instruction on how to question your own perceptual constructs based in hostility or fear, and that begins their collapse. Remember, there's a passage in the Course that says, perception is a skill made up by you to take
mm-hmm.
the place of what the Creator gave you in creation. And it says the same thing about memory. I've been working with and experiencing. Mm. I hadn't seen that particular thought in the Course until just recently. And I've been experimenting you know, in my own personal process, was saying, okay, if memory is a thing that I made up, then I'm willing to let it go and not have memory. I don't know what life is going to look like without it. I can't fathom it, but
yeah,
I'm willing to. And it's been interesting. This has just been like the last couple of days for me. And there have been places where I wanted to go to memory and it's like, no, it's not there. And then it's like that other level, that other set of faculties opens up. And it sounds like you're there, that's opening up for you. And that's awesome. I mean, that's human life showing up in human form and overcoming carbon-based memories, perceptual system and memory. That's like monumental. It's a nice work.
Well, what blows my mind is that the mind shifter and you're saying, find out about that monster. And I kept asking the monster, who are you and what do you want? And not getting very far, but the suggestion, it's like everything is working together toward getting it, toward freedom, release, or whatever it is. So
wasn't there somebody in those ancient scriptures that said something like, to those who believe in love, all things work together for good if we connect to being?
Yeah.
That
wasn't
coming
that,
from
yeah.
that state of being allows everything to be for your good, for your blessing.
That's so good. Yeah, you know, I thought, isn't it Paul who said, all things work for good for those who love God. And I thought, that's nice, but I don't love God. But this is coming from the other end. This taught me how to love enough so that things can start working for good. I didn't have to do it.
Right. And the Greeks translated.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, just remembering that the Greeks translated that word love as a verb, something we can do. The real context
right.
of it is those who are living, Rachma is open, we're living as the active presence of love. To those who are in that space, everything is organized and we get to see how it is organized for our uplift, our benefit, and our growth. If we're in hostility
That's
or fear,
exactly.
nothing produces that result. It just creates more drama
yeah.
and trauma and suffering and pain and conflict and separation and divorce and hate and fear and all the insanity. But the minute we shift into bringing conscious, active, present love, which I would not classify the way the Greeks, you know, translated it, of loving God. No, it's being in the presence of love, living in awareness of that awesome field that we can't even start to describe, in which we live, move, and have our being. And that brings the force of, what's the best way to say it? The force of the master healing energy of the ages to bear on everything that's playing out in our perceptual constructs, and allowing that collapse so that what shows up is truth, the presence of being.
Reminds me of, because when synchronicities happen, it's like a little signal saying, you're on the right track. And what you were talking
yes.
about yesterday, about Bruce Lipton reading your book when you called him up, that is crazy amazing. But it's like, what happens? This morning when I got up from my dream, I opened my Way of Mastery book, which Dr. Tim is going through, open it up to a page I wasn't at, and it said, I promise you this, if you become wholly committed to awakening from the dream you have dreamt since the stars first began to appear in the heavens, and if your one desire is to be only what God created, then lay at the altar of your heart with every breath, everything you think you know, everything you think you need, and look lovingly upon every place that fear has made a home in your mind, and allow correction to come. And I thought, boom, that's like your
bang,
thing. Not quite as
miraculous,
but along
gone.
The same line. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was interesting. I was appreciative of Roma's question about the balloons and got into that whole conversation about the cranial structure. And when Jean left, I stayed here and I did some still point work. And that that part of the conversation just expanded into a whole experience with my own cranium and the work I've, you know, done on it over the years. And I did a whole different level of it yesterday afternoon. And it was just like, well, thank you for that question, Roma, because it just opened a whole piece of the puzzle for me in doing that still point session yesterday.
And Michael, also you were, when I got back and we were talking, there were two instances, kind of like what you and Susan are talking about now. One where you were talking about the generations, and then Michael called.
It was awesome.
And then a little later you were talking about the father, and then I came in and shared about Dad saying he loved me.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Holy crap.
In my still point breathing, you know, I've done layers of this before. I've shared it. And, you know, a while back I shared how I had this visual of the darkness and the uncountable small lights that were there, and the darkness was the suffering that my generations were carrying. So in my still point session, along about 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon, I was working on opening my cranium and allowing a new energy flow, and then wishing to extend that energy flow to all of those in my generations and inviting their pain to come forward on a new level and to be part of processing that pain out of my generations. Literally, I actually said that out loud as I was breathing, and my phone rang, and it was my son, Michael J., and he was sitting at his computer. He's been considering, they have a 10-day free trial on Ancestry.com, and he was coming close to the end of his 10-day trial, and he'd been fooling around with doing some genealogy stuff, and he was calling me to ask some questions about different family members from the past, the generations, and we spent about 45 minutes going over different bull in the generational patterns from the past, and it was just like so serendipitous. And we completed the call with just the sweetest acknowledgement I have ever had with my son, in acknowledging who he was, the difference he's made in my life when he came into the world, his birth, and the 24 hours that went after his birth. I shared in detail that whole thing, and just an acknowledgement of who he is now as a man in our world. And in turn, he shared an acknowledgement with me, and it was just like the sweetest space and the sweetest energy that I've ever had with my son. It was just, you know, it was a total manifestation of what I had just spoken out loud of. I'm inviting my generations to come in, and I was thinking mostly of the past, but here's Michael J., who's future generation, on the phone with me, doing genealogy work, and we went back through, you know, grandmother, grandfather, great. It was just, you know, very powerful.
Oh,
and she says, she came in with that. I had just finished. I'd gotten off the phone with Michael J. and continued to breathe and tapped into relationship with my father. And it was kind of gently, it was not a happy relationship. And then Jeannie came in and shared the fact that her father had just said the words, I love you. And it was just like, you know, all things work together for good.
Mm-hmm. That is gorgeous. And the whole thing with Jeannie coming in and having heard that from her dad, who's been so gone that he came back and came back to say that.
Yeah. And he'd been gone, pretty much gone, the whole afternoon. That was just the last minute or so she was there that she said that, and bingo. He takes back that thought to her and was just like, congratulations, sweetie, that was awesome. And at that point, I'm not sure, Jeannie, how awesome you really thought it was, because she was processing a lot of grief from loss in the times that she hadn't heard that. So it was like a whole, there's this mixed bag of processing that old energy and really just being in the celebration of receiving that. And vicariously, I got to receive it too from him, and that opened me resolving and moving through some other energy patterns with my father. So it was pretty profound.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. Those are beautiful stories.
And I hope you've written down your story from your dream.
I did write it down. It was too much to tell. You know, other people's dreams can be kind of dull. But for me, whoa, yeah, I did. But, you know, Michael, you talking about Roma. She was talking about her sister and how nasty her sister is to her. And I said, well, I'm the nasty sister to my sister. I'm not mean to her at all. I'm loving to her. But my feelings about her, and this reversed all of that. She's like, she's here for me, and we're here for each other. And this is, it doesn't matter what went before. It was all for good, all for learning, all shared. So much.
And
Roma
just put her hand up.
Okay, and notice Roma just put her hand up, but before we pull her into the conversation, notice, Susan, that your resentment, ill feeling, whatever it was with your sister, was never about your sister to begin with. It was just about your mind.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we can put it on sister, brother, aunt, uncle, father, mother, but
when
I realize that all hostility and fear is just a product of my mind, I can play the denial game and pretend it's about something else. And what a fabulous opening to be able to move through that is just monumental.
Ah, oh, it's such a relief. It's so light. Yeah. What did you say, Jeannie?
Nice.
Oh, I was just saying that you were just mentioning Roma. Michael had just mentioned Roma, and now she put her hand up. So I was going to bring her in.
Well, let's say hello.
Oh, great.
Roma,
aloha.
You're on, and Susan's with
us,
too.
Aloha, everyone. The reason I pressed one was because I wanted to share with you that in the radio, in the program yesterday, when I heard the words nasal cranial, it was
right.
You know, I was hearing the words, but if you were reading a book, you would be reading all these words, and then all of a sudden, nasal cranial was lit up with golden light. So I just wanted to share that with you, especially after hearing that it really began a process for you. It you know, I guess God was working through me yesterday. I've been questioning that because I feel so different than I ever did before. So it's good to hear that my question actually started you on a journey that's been really good for you. It made me happy to hear it. I was weeping when I was 5 minutes ago, weeping with joy.
Well, we're glad you're with us.
Well, me too. Yeah. That's really all I wanted to share.
And Michael, if you're talking, we can't hear you.
I had pushed my mute button, but I was just saying sweet and thank you. Any other thoughts, Susan? You did have another topic
you're
going to move on to.
I have another thought, a totally unrelated thought. I would love to set the Psalms to music, but as soon as I started reading them with the responsible communication language, I realized so much of them are so negative. I don't know if I can do this. And yet, if I try to rewrite them, have you ever tried to rewrite them in positive language? It would be a tremendous challenge.
Well, I think the challenge would be that everything that those that negative regulatory speech resonates in us, we'd have to work through and come to resolution to be able to just conceive of what the opposite would be.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sounds like a really profound and powerful piece of work for you to do, and I think it would be awesome.
Well, I started one, and it isn't hard, but it's such an adjustment, and it leaves out a lot. You know, I would like to tear you limb from limb and bury you in the ground and all that sort of thing. There's no translating that unless you rewrote it like, I would like to lift you up into the sky and hold you on my shoulders and that sort of thing. Maybe that's what it should be. I'll look again.
Perhaps you could do a dual translation of it or transmutation of it, and speaking it as a healed person. There was a time, I can see in my hostility, when I wanted to tear you limb from limb and destroy you, and now I realize from my being that my only job is to raise you up and bring you healing and support, to care for you and to live as the presence of love with you. That you could really, I mean, that would really communicate to people what the old mind looked like and what the possibility is. And the person who holds vengeance and would like to, you know, would like to tear somebody limb from limb could go, wow, I never thought there was another option with this person. That'd be powerful. I think that would be awesome.
It would be powerful.
I could see that published and really making a splash as to what the real healing process is about.
Wow. Well, you know, to do that, I'll have to think.
You'll have to
rethink my goal, which is, you know, one reason to write for the church is because the church needs music and they use it immediately. This may not ever get used in the church, and it doesn't matter. I'd have to let go of that goal, but that wouldn't be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So what were you going to say?
And who knows, maybe it would be used in the church. Maybe if you, you know, if the right minister or priest or whatever is there, that they go, wow, I never thought of these things in these terms. And what a message to deliver to our congregation. Poof.
It's a fabulous idea. It's a fabulous idea. It's, my mind is beginning to explode with how great the idea is. Brilliant idea.
It would be very powerful to, and it would give people, I think, a sense of how thousands of years ago in those conversations, people were reaching for something higher, but couldn't attain it. And that here we are now, 2,000 years later, and we are attaining it, so we can bring it into language and we can talk about it. And I think that would be so inspiring and give people who have been reaching for resolution and healing the ability to let go of self-judgment. Look, I wasn't able to do it, and make the leap up to the next level. I think it'd be a profound gift.
Wow. Amazing. Great idea.
Excuse me.
So,
I just took a drink.
That's okay.
And went down the wrong road.
down the wrong road. I know about that. Yeah. Well, speaking of all that, I'm about to do a follow-up session to finish a worksheet started on the phone call talk I gave the other day. The woman's going to call me, and we're going to start working together. But I had one question about that. We're on Zoom, and I love being able to see the client because body language, facial expressions are important, but there's something invasive about Zoom. It's as if we have access to looking at one another very closely without the other one necessarily knowing it. And some people really react to that knowledge that they could be scrutinized while, you know, by someone without knowing it, especially in a large group. You can enlarge one frame and really watch person as they scratch or pick their nose or whatever. I'm just wondering, I think I'd like to say to her, look, pretend we're in a real office. Would we be facing one another, face front? Probably not. We'd be sitting sort of at an angle, not looking directly at each other at all times, able to turn the head away. Please get comfortable. Sit the way you would in a real office. And I also will look away and be listening. And if I need to look, I may look, but it won't be a constant stare. This may be more my issue, and it certainly is my issue. But have you ever done one-on-one counseling? I should ask Jeannie. She probably one-on-one counseling on Zoom.
Yes, I do it a lot.
Absolutely.
Okay, and how do you do it?
I'm usually just sitting here, and, of course, behind me is the baby's room, so you get to see all the toys and things. So, and the client, sometimes they're in bed in their pajamas. Sometimes they're sitting in a chair in their living room. You know, it doesn't really matter. And, I usually am looking at them unless I'm taking notes. Now, one thing that I do is I ask them, do you want me to record this and send you the recording? Because a lot of times if they're in the midst of their process, they'll not remember everything that you said or that they said.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they say no, they don't want it recorded, then that's fine. And if they do, then I click record and then afterwards send them the link to it. And kind of like I do when we do our sessions, our breathing sessions and follow-up sessions and the workshop classes. And then
I'll that's what I would
notes.
Add. I would add there, Jeannie, you know, when you ask the question, have we experienced it doing that? You'll remember that when we do the still point session, we actually send a link that says, here's how we would like you to set your camera up. And the reason for that is, you know, as we are breathing people through Zoom, Jeannie's constantly shifting full screen to each person, observing exactly what's happening with their physiology so that we can coach them. And, you know, if I think maybe a worksheet or two around that for you, because I think that's perhaps an issue for you to break through. But if I were the client, I'd be saying, please watch every signal I give so that I get the clearest, most profound feedback I can get. Don't look away from me. Be with me. And, you know, oftentimes it's the clues. Just watching someone's breath can be and keying them into the place where it's held can be create the biggest opening. So that would be my input about it.
That's so interesting. And I knew you probably were doing that, and I'm so self-conscious. I'm thinking, how am I supposed to concentrate on my breathing when I know Michael might be popping in and examining and seeing if I'm swallowing or not, and if I swallow, he's going to notice it, and all this crap going on in my head.
That sounds like a worksheet on
over and over and over. Yeah. Like, what color is your car?
Like...
What's happening with your swallowing, you know? God, it's endless.
Well, and it sounds like a worksheet on being criticized.
Yeah, maybe. Could be. Yeah, doing it wrong and all that stuff. Yeah, and trying to do it right. And I'm a failure and all that crap. Yeah.
I also will take notes. Like a lot of times when I'm doing a session, and we actually, you know, might be doing a wake-up sheet, but then I think about, you know, something she says or he says that really fits with a purpose worksheet. And I'll make a note and say, okay, I'm going to send you a direct link to the purpose worksheet. You know, that might help you. And we don't talk about it at that moment, but I make myself a note to send them an email, you know, along with the recorded link and say, you know, and here's this worksheet that I said I would send you or whatever.
Nice. That's true. Yeah. Well, I've sent her your original worksheet. I think it's a 7-step worksheet and the pattern worksheet, and said if you can print these out and be ready to take, you know, write while we're doing it, write down. And if you don't want to write, I'll write. But
anyway, that it's great to have access to all those other tools that they can get. True.
The other thing you could do is just explain your thoughts around it, and what just do a full disclosure. You know? I have an issue with people watching me and such, so maybe if that's a problem or otherwise, the way I can serve you best is by watching every mannerism, every tick, every holding of the breath, and listening to every word. That's the way I can best serve you and feed back to you. Which would you like?
That's lovely. Yeah.
I can always back off and do it more indirectly, but for me, mm-hmm. and of course I'm kind of the okay, we're going to go for it no matter what, so I'd be like
right.
Yeah, pick up everything you can,
right? Boy, this has been a good phone call.
Sweet. So, any other thoughts at this point?
Oh, there are always thoughts, Michael. Why don't you just? I'll bring a thought on another radio show.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Sweet.
All right. Yeah, it's a big one, so I don't want to open it up today.
All right. Well, we'll hold the space for when the time is right.
Okay. Excellent. Thanks
Sweet.
So much.
All right. We appreciate you. Lots of love and blessings.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Jeannie.
Thank you. Appreciate you. So we have 18 minutes. I don't know if you want to begin the first part of the worksheet or do one of them, and then we could carry over to Monday on the other one.
Well, I don't know that we could do the whole worksheet in 18 minutes. It'd be pretty quick. We could try it.
Okay, maybe just
I'd rather
answer their question about step one.
Yeah. I'd rather have a hand go up and do it all in one fell swoop. But let's get started. We can always pick up, on Monday if we don't get through the whole sheet. So what I've got in front of me is a printed copy of exactly what the simpler worksheet is from the app. And the app, if you're not familiar with it, you can download free from your app store by typing in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, one word, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. Type that into your app store, and you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. Click the button, download it. It's totally, completely private. You're the only one that will ever be able to see anything that you put in there. And when you complete doing the worksheet, you can print it off and keep yourself a record. So it's entitled Stress Reality Management, Empowering True Forgiveness. We define at the top of the page of that worksheet, forgiveness is a tool for changing my reality, and we define my reality as the perceptual output of my mind. There's a premise. The premise is our essential nature as human beings is love. Think of holding a newborn. Think of healing is to remove anything that is unlike our true nature so that we can back to the experience of love 24/7, 365. And then number one, A, and the first step in each process that you do, if you remember the love exchange, the first thing to do is acknowledge yourself as who you are. So the first blank in 1A is a blank where you put your own name. And then acknowledge yourself. So I, Michael, who am love, have, through denial, trained my carbon-based memory. And carbon-based memory simply refers to the fact that this, if you asked a modern-day physiologist to assess what the chemical components are of your structure, the atomic components, they would tell you that the base element is carbon. And so this piece of clay, this body-mind unit, referred in the ancient teachings as adamos, which simply means red clay, is basically made of carbon, and it stores information, memory. So I've trained my carbon-based memory to show me the lie that my feelings and my giving up the experience of my essence, love, are caused by my trigger. So I'm training my mind in a lie, the acknowledgement here. First of all, who am I? And then what I've done, I'm acknowledging that what I've done is I've trained my mind to show me that my trigger, and this is where you name the person who you're aiming your projection at. So whoever is the object of the worksheet would be who you'd name in number 1B. So both parties are named in step number 1. A is your own name, acknowledging yourself as love, and then B, recognizing that whoever you name is the trigger. Then number 1C is describe what happened, so my reality. So here's where you just free flow with whatever you've got in your mind about this person, if it's nasty, if it's ugly, if it's vicious, whatever it is. You're just going to describe the construct that your mind is showing you in this situation. Honestly, truly, and, you know, just putting it out there as clean and clear as you can. And most people, in order to play in the world of projection, in order to play in the realm where I can believe that something outside of me is the cause of what's happening inside of me, down the true cause of what's happening inside of me. The mechanism for doing that is holding the breath. So there's a reminder at this step to breathe, because I'm not going to be able to access what I've been hiding from myself if I'm holding my breath. Breath, the holding of the breath, inhibits the flow or movement of mind energy and awareness within the system. So I've written my story, as ugly, nasty, or beautiful as it is, because you can do worksheets on positive things in your life. Remember, the idea here is to get to the point of collapsing this thing called perception, this skill we made up to take the place of the creation. We substitute the constructs of our mind for what's actually going on. So Susan just gave us a beautiful example of that. What was her mind constructing around her sister? Some things that weren't very nice. And when she was able to let loose of that, what showed up? Oh, this is my mind. This is for my healing. You're not going to see that if you're holding your breath, because you're locking down what the underlying challenge is. And so breathe. Then number 1D, my feelings resonated by this situation. And then there's a bracket that reminds us, all hostility and fear is from internal corrupt data. So when I'm in an hostility or fear state, I want to be able to tell myself the truth about what I'm feeling. Because once I tell myself the truth about what I'm feeling, I can then more easily open to the next level of what's the thought I use to generate this feeling. And, you know, we've talked before about the fact that the cell biologists are showing us that when you think a thought, you produce a neuropeptide, an actual molecule in your body. And that molecule, the neuropeptide, circulates around in the structure, and until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches, it lands on the receptor site. Now, my take is that when that neuropeptide hits the receptor site, the cell sets up a communication signal that says, this is on track. This is a good piece of mind energy, creator, for you to use. Or it sets up hostility or fear. You don't want to be playing in this arena. because you'll destroy yourself. So when I can accurately describe what my feelings are, I've taken a step toward being able to own the thoughts that generate that, take responsibility for them, and bring a shift. So number 1D, I'm going to name my feelings. And what we suggest is that each feeling is representative of a different thought that needs to be removed from your structure, that needs to be forgiven. So you do one feeling in each worksheet. So if you say, oh yeah, when that happened, I was so angry. Yeah, I was afraid. I can see how deeply sad I was and offended. There are 4 different worksheets, one for each of those feelings. And what you'll find is each of those feelings comes from a different piece of mind energy, a different thought. And oftentimes, each of those thoughts point to a different goal that you have. And so a separate worksheet for each one is appropriate. And then number 1E, my thoughts. What causes my feelings about how I see it? So now I'm going to look at if I have fear. So if I have fear and my mind's telling us about what just happened, what thought do I have to think in order to feel that fear? Like, for instance, if someone came along and, let's say it's got something to do with investments, and I have a thought that I'm going to lose money, then I might have a feeling of fear. But I might, in exactly the same circumstance as we're talking about money and investments, and this person brings forward, whatever it is they have to say, and my thought is, wow, they're going to increase my net worth, I'm not going to be feeling fear about that. My mind tells me it's about that, but it's not about that at all. It's about the thoughts I think. And when I start to recognize that, then I become more responsible for the thoughts I think, and I realize that my thought, if the predominant rule my mind follows is somebody's always out to get me, then I'm going to interpret everything as a threat because that's the fear filter active. If I change my thoughts to, oh, someone's always here to support me, then I'm now in rock mind, now in a space where love is present and it changes everything. So what's my thought around how I see this situation? And so with our investment conversation, it's a thought of, this is going to be uplifting to my net worth. Or if the thought is loss, then there's a thought of fear. So I want to be very specific with each feeling and take responsibility for creating those feelings by the thoughts I think. Again, the way I visualize it, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but it's my intuition that when I think a thought, when that thought hits the receptor site on the cell lights up with a feeling, and the feeling is to warn us as creators, is this something I want to proceed with, or is this something I should back off of? Anything based in hostility or fear, you want to confront and forgive. Then number 1F, I want to punish or avoid. What's your punishment thought? I want to, avoidance oftentimes, a lot of people say, well, I don't have any punishment thoughts. I just don't want anything to do with them anymore. Well, actually isolating people is one of the worst punishments you can do. So avoidance is a punishment thought. So the punishment thought might be, I want to punch him in the nose, or I want to run away, or I want to whatever. So then accurately in number 1E, what's the thought that causes your feeling? Or pardon me, number 1F. Now, I want to start to bring the shifts to my mind. I mean, I've laid out in step 1 the scenario. And in step two, I want to start to shift my mind out of the lie. Remember that if your mind is producing a perceptual construct based in hostility or fear, your mind is using corrupt data, and it's always a lie. When you get down to the root of it, when you correct that corrupt data, that lie is going to collapse. It's going to disappear. So I'm going to begin that process in step two. I now choose to honor truth. We actually need to change that word, Jeannie, in step two there on that, that particular one. You know, we've been going through all of our literature since we've gotten clear on love is a noun. It's what we are, not what we do. And we have fallen into the error over the years of doing this work, I have, of utilizing the word love as the culture does as a verb, which it is not. And so it's going to be a correction for the next time around on this. So I choose to, and we'll shift that word to honor, I choose to honor truth and willingly go through the physical, mental, and emotional symptoms of healing. Remember, on a physical level, healing looks like any kind of physical symptom you've ever had in low energy. On a mental level, it looks like any kind of negative thought you've ever had in confusion. On an emotional level, it looks like any kind of negative feeling you've ever had and depression. If you're symptomatic, how do you tell whether this is a disease process that you should run out and get a drug for to try and shut it down because your denial isn't enough? Or is it a healing process? Is my body processing through these things? The questions you ask yourself to determine whether or not your symptoms are healing or disease are: one, have I been doing in a general way in my life more and more of the right things, nutritionally, emotionally, forgiveness, exercise, all of those things? If the answer to that is yes, that's the first thing, that checkbox that goes, yes, this is probably a healing process. Two, just before I went into these symptoms, had I hit a new level of vitality? The body-mind unit has a built-in protect mechanism. If you're at a level 5 vitality and you have a level 7 toxin, your structure is not going to serve up that level 7 toxin, because literally a level 5 vitality, it could threaten your, literally could threaten your life. So the structure is not going to release a toxin that you don't have the vitality to handle. This can be confusing at first, because when you hit a new level of vitality, you go, wow, I feel so great. This is awesome. This is wonderful. And then you wonder why the next morning when you wake up, you feel lower than a snake's belly. It's like, what's wrong with this picture? I was feeling so great last night. Yes, you were feeling so great. And that new level of vitality now empowers you to go to the next step of healing and process out what doesn't belong. There are your symptoms. So that's the second question. One, have been doing more and more the right things. Two, had I hit a new level of vitality? Three, what's happening with my elimination? In a disease process, there's a tendency for there to be a restriction of elimination. In a healing process, there's an increase in elimination. And I'm talking about the eliminative output of all of the eliminative channels, the bowel, the urinary tract, skin, mucous membranes, you know, sinuses, lungs, all of the eliminative organs, skin, will tend to create more elimination. And especially if the colon's blocked and things like the skin are going to, you know, you're going to see skin eruptions or rashes, those sorts of things. And so the third or the fourth thing, question you ask yourself is to determine whether the symptoms are healing or whether it's a disease process, is that in a healing situation, there's going to be a tendency to crave the drug that you used way back when to keep this issue shut down. So, you know, if you've been on the wagon for 25 years and all of a sudden you want to drink, what's going on in your life? What's happening? If you're going back to something that happened 25 years ago that you used to use alcohol to shut down, literally, perhaps the actual molecules are stored, and if not, the energetic signature of alcohol is stored with that trauma, and when it opens, then you'll start to process through it. And so those four things will tell you that your symptoms are healing in process. So I'm willing to go through the physical, mental, and emotional symptoms of healing. And that's about the time we have for today. So Monday we'll pick up at step three and continue with this simple worksheet and then go into the more complex one. In the meantime, everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.